Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/acast. That's burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello everybody, welcome to Ramble Reacts. A famous win for Everton against their City rivals, and the Blades gave Manchester United a scare. I'm Marcus Speller.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Well, everybody. Everton beat Liverpool, Luke Moore, 2-0. Great performance from those Toffees. It looks like Liverpool might be out the title race now. It looks like Everton are going to survive yet again in the Premier League. What an action-packed night at Goodison Park.
It was remarkable, Des. It was absolutely remarkable. I perhaps did see a struggle for Liverpool given how they've played here and there in recent weeks, and given that, you know, Everton, we expected a reaction after they were so poor against Chelsea, and we saw a bit of that against Forest, and it's a derby game, of course, and the cauldron that Goodison Park can be, all that stuff plays a part. But I don't think you can mitigate for Liverpool being as bad as they were. Goodness me. Yeah. That, I mean, if that is a team that is got, has, you know, has their collective heart set on winning a title to say goodbye to Jurgen Klopp, then I am a Dutch uncle, because they were a million miles off it. They really were. Everton were good, did all the basic things well. I'm sure we'll come on to how good they were. But the big story here, sorry Everton fans, the big story here is if you are going to defend like that and finish your chances like that, you are going to be very lucky to finish in mid-table, let alone winning a Premier League title. It was poor. It was shocking. It was incredible to witness. A brilliant game. Another great slice of the Barclays, but very, very, very bad night at the office for Liverpool. Astonishing, really.
Yeah, indeed it was. And so bad that it made Jordan Pickford shout at the camera at full time, "Up the fucking Toffees."
Yeah, but I feel like he kind of does that 50 times a day anyway.
I doubt he did it at Stamford Bridge after they lost 6-0. Although,
if he did do it, you wouldn't be that surprised, would you?
I'd say fair play to the lad. You know, he's trying to get a bit of team spirit or something. But yeah, straight from the off, Everton, it became very apparent that Everton were at the races. Now, when that happens in a game like this, when you've got a very fancied side against a side who are struggling and have not that long ago been beaten 6-0, of course, you think, oh, okay, Everton are just going to, you know, go hell for leather early on and try and nick a goal, that kind of thing, and then maybe sit back, hit them on the break, which they kind of did, but that doesn't tell the story. You thought to yourself, okay, Liverpool might be a little bit rabbit in headlights to begin with, but then the rhythm of the game will take place and they'll get going and they'll get into their stride and they'll focus because they are after a Premier League title, lest we forget.
Yeah.
And it just didn't happen. No. Yes, Liverpool missed chances, but Everton looked like every time they got a set piece, every time they got the ball into the box, they might score.
Yeah, it felt like that, didn't it? And also, yeah, you know, I think you're spot on there. And we talked a bit about how when Chelsea approached the game against Arsenal, it was really surprising how badly they managed the occasion. They didn't step up into the game at the Emirates and say, all the pressure's on Arsenal. Our seasons are right off. We can really push them early and get physical here, and the pressure will build and build and build, and it'll become much harder for them as the minutes tick on. They didn't. They kind of capitulated. They couldn't compete with them physically. They had no intensity, no temper. They conceded the goal early and it kind of went bad from there. This, you know, on Wednesday night from Everton was a dictionary definition of how you approach a game of this nature. Liverpool going for the title. It's a derby game. Everton do need the points, or did need the points, but it wouldn't be a disaster if they lost that game. I mean, Everton, to be perfectly fair to them, this is going to sound like I'm kind of being critical of them after they've had a great win, but they're used to losing games. There's no disappointment at Goodison Park Everton fans haven't seen, right? Yeah. So it wouldn't have completely written off their season if they lost this game.
Yeah.
But they approached it so well. They knew the pressure would build on Liverpool. They knew there were chinks in Liverpool's armour. They knew they could get at them. And you're absolutely right to say every single set piece looked like it was a threat. Yeah, the note I wrote halfway through the first half to myself ahead of recording was, can Everton maintain this intensity? Because I was thinking, if they can, they'll win this game.
Yeah, right.
And so often do we see a team who go out there with great intentions and really max it out for even a half or even an hour, and this Liverpool team finds a way. The difference now is, I don't know if this Liverpool team can always find a way, because they haven't got the players in the kind of form they have had over recent years to bail them out. And you talked about before, you talked about the system that they relied upon to beat Fulham.
Yeah.
Well, this wasn't a challenge the same as Fulham. This is a completely different challenge. And they failed it.
If you didn't know anything about the Premier League, you would think Everton were the ones going for the title.
Yeah.
Liverpool looked like the team who thought, we're trying to hang on in here, but we just can't compete.
They couldn't. Remarkable. It was like they... It was like they were going back to the well, and the well was dry.
And
you talk about the missing chances. You know, there are ways of missing chances. I know that sounds a bit weird, but, you know, you can... I mean, there was one chance, one that Diaz hit the inside of the post, which is a bit unlucky, I suppose.
That was the only effort that looked like it could have gone in, if you see what I mean.
The rest of the finishing was absolutely hapless.
Pickford made a few saves, but I mean, I backed him to make those saves.
It was saves he had to make. I mean, they weren't spectacular saves. They were good saves. You know, every save really.
Yeah,
you know, that
blocks
nature
more,
is a good
I suppose,
save in the Premier League. Yeah, but yeah, there was it was a lethal combination for Liverpool of defending in such a hapless way, and also missing so many chances and not even really approaching those chances with any kind of conviction whatsoever. They lost every battle. They were second to balls. They didn't cope at all physically. And what Sean Dyche has delivered for us the day after St. George's Day, Marcus, is a beautiful British performance of pluck and physicality and tackles and set-piece football. And really, that is what we want to see.
It is.
That's what we want to see England do at the Euros this summer. Just go in there and batter the shit out of everyone.
I'd love to.
And go home in the quarters.
I'd love to win a tournament that way. No, it's true. I think that good old British values won the day.
Can I row back from that? Because I'm obviously being a bit churlish.
No, you're talking about the basics, though.
What I'm saying is there's a lot to be said for a striker who started to hit a bit of form after a really terrible year or so in Calvert-Lewin, who can occupy those two centre-backs, put them under pressure, give them not a moment's rest. Because what happens when you do that? if they're a bit shaking themselves, they make mistakes. And then the set piece thing is, Everton have got to be realistic. They're not as good a team as Liverpool are. So they've got to maximise the opportunities they get. And they did that. Every time they had a set piece, they thought they were going to score. Liverpool were all at sea. They had no dominance at all. And the things you associate with Konate, but also Van Dijk, and they're more than this. They're not just lumps, those two. They're not heads on a stick. They're good players, but they are also really physical. And they couldn't deal with it. They could not deal with it. It was a complete mismatch. And I kind of feel like sometimes when you watch the Premier League, a team will nick a win. Crystal Palace kind of nicked a win against Liverpool. I don't want to take anything away from them. It was a great win for them, but it wasn't the same type of win as Everton have just done. Everton deserved the win. They dominated the game in certain ways where Liverpool needed a reminder that if you don't do those basic things well in the Premier League, more often than not, you're not going to get a result.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with doing the basics well. I mean, look, Calvert-Lewin, I'll out-jump this defender and head it at the goal.
And he should have scored earlier, by the way, but he was fouled, and nothing was made of it, and it wasn't picked up on the broadcast. He had a chance early on. It's a great chance for a header. Szoboszlai pushed him in the back so he couldn't get his head over it, and no one said anything. To me, that was a blatant foul, so I was pleased later on he was able to get his goal.
He certainly got his own back, didn't he? I mean, he was brilliant, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, absolutely superb. Gary Neville gave him man of the match, although we think he gave him man of the match because he actually gave man of the match to Daniel Calvert-Lewin. But you know, I don't want to be
why
too...
is Gary so weird? I think he escapes the radar quite a lot that he's quite weird.
Yeah, his brother takes a lot of the heat off him, doesn't he? Certainly on this show. But I mean, look, we knew Liverpool were, you know, everybody has seen them recently, how they've not been the side that we that they can be, that they have been for the most part of this season. Dyche is, you know, he's been a Premier League manager a long time. He's got some tricks up his sleeve and so on. He knew that Liverpool were there for the take, and that's why they've set up like this. He has revved those Everton players up, and he sent them out there. And the temperament and the emotions he's got spot on for his players in that game at Goodison, which is kudos to him. I have to say, Luke, that again, I'm pretty sure for the Forest game, Dyche introduced the tracksuit because we know him to wear a suit and tie for games. He introduced the tracksuit. I'm pretty sure it was against Nottingham Forest. He did that. They got the win there. You know, there was no luck involved in that win. They got it. And he thought, you know what, I'm going with the tracksuit again. So kudos to him.
Because are you suggesting that Sean Dyche's tracksuit and the kind of friction it caused because of the material might have interfered with VAR?
Possibly.
Against Forest. And that's why they won.
Can Gareth Southgate wear it during the Euros? It was going to be my next question.
Ask if you'll borrow it. Imagine if Southgate walked out of England's first game at Euros in an Everton tracksuit.
It'd be outrageous. SD.
You're right to point it out. I think it's absolutely a factor. Are you suggesting that perhaps a handful of Liverpool defenders just caught a glimpse of Dyche in the tracksuit just as they were attempting to defend that first Everton goal?
Possibly.
And it went to complete shit. It was like a mass hypnosis event. Yeah. They could not connect with the ball, like these players. And Brantwaite even tried his best to miss it, and it still went in. And then Calvert-Lewin just piled in later on.
Like, Calvert-Lewin thought to himself, now's my chance. The David
Calvert-Lewin piled in like... You know, Nigel Farage had just got wind of a right wing march. He's running there as quick as he could,
up a drainpipe stuff. And that's exactly what he should be doing.
Yeah, everything goes in the net when you're a forward. That's how you got to do it.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. You've got to score. There's no point in him admiring the shot, leaving it for a defender to perhaps scramble it off the line.
I have to say, by the way, the atmosphere inside Goodison seemed incredible.
No, but I mean, at the end of the game, as I say,
they smelt blood from early on, though, didn't they?
It was quite something.
What I would say is, it's just that you know, you're going to talk about how, you know, you said at the top of this Liverpool, you know, have they kind of blown their chance of winning the title and all that kind of stuff?
I think they have.
Yeah, and I think you're probably right. And I don't think it's just because they've lost a single game here. I think the word I'd probably use to talk about it would be control. Like, how often do you not see Man City and Arsenal actually in control of games? They generally tend to be in control of games. And if they're not in control, it's because they're playing a fucking brilliant team, like Arsenal against Bayern Munich or whatever, or Man City might have an off day, like the Aston Villa game, for example. But they always seem to be in control. Doesn't mean they always win, but they seem to know what they're doing, the game plan's there, and they're in control of what's happening. Liverpool in recent weeks, and perhaps it's more symptomatic of how they play, which is slightly different to Man City and Arsenal, They have no control whatsoever. Mm. They couldn't instill any control in this game at all. They couldn't get to a position where they say, look, we play the way we play. Our players are better than them. Our record against Everton is very good. We need to stick to this.
Yeah.
When you take into account they rested key players for the Fulham game, presumably for this game, they had no control over anything whatsoever. It was the opposite of control.
Very strange performance. And it looks like they've all kind of checked out now. There was a moment where the camera cut to the Liverpool bench with about 20 minutes to go. And yes, they're 2-0 down, but you can still get something out of the game. Again, if you're a top-level side playing against that team, you think... I think we could still turn this round. Mm. But it cut to the Liverpool bench. Klopp was just sat there, and all the Liverpool subs and everybody, they were just, it was like they were just resigned to the fact that we're not going to win this game. And we know the ramifications for that, and I don't think we can do anything about it. Would you imagine seeing Arteta or Guardiola and their benches like that? As I said, I don't think they're going to suddenly turn into, you know, Mourinho and the Roma bench during that Europa League final, for crying out loud. I don't think it's going to be like that, but it was just the figures they cut. And I thought that was so telling. I really did.
As well.
And mentioning the players that were rested for the Fulham game, well, it is remarkable. I mean, the midfield three and the front three in that Fulham game, five of them were swapped for Everton. Only Luis Diaz was the one who played in that game. You had Endo, Gravenberch and Harvey Elliott in midfield for Liverpool against Fulham. And they pretty much controlled the game. Fulham scored, of course. But ultimately Liverpool won 3-1. I spoke about it on Monday very briefly. But Liverpool, their individual quality showed, with Alexander-Arnold's free kick, Gravenberch's finish and so on. They didn't create that much against Fulham. I didn't think they were brilliant, but the system of them pressing, just strangling Fulham. Fulham couldn't really get out. There was a lot of kind of long balls or clearances from Fulham. They just strangled them, really. And we thought, you know what? If we do this, we are a better team than them. Our quality will show. And they got the job done. None of that was the case against Everton. Mo Salah can't hit a barn door from five paces.
It's as bad as I've seen him play.
I can't tell you a
time where he's played worse than that.
And he is one of the best footballers ever to wear a Liverpool shirt. Let's get this right. What that man's achieved in this country alone playing football has been stupendous. Okay. And to see him playing like this right now, I just wonder if he will take the Saudi option come the summer. Do you know what I mean? Will we see him play for the new manager, whoever that is, for Liverpool? I don't know, but there's something not right. It's like he's even playing with an injury or something.
It could be that. I was thinking that. I was thinking that, you know, when Klopp announces that he's going to move on quite early in the season, relatively speaking, and I thought the way it was handled was actually really good. Like, it didn't leak out. He did it in the right way. He did it, you know, spoke on his own terms to the fan base first and foremost. And I thought it was actually a very well done piece of work. Particularly these days, it's very difficult to keep things under wrap these days. But at that moment, it was always going to go one way or the other. You could galvanise people around you, have one last hurrah, you know, one last shot at the big time and see if you can go on a high. Or it can be corrosive because people don't know what's going to come after. And it can be unsettling. I don't think you should read too much into a derby match where they've been the second best. But I do think that, you know, I would say Liverpool don't have much of a chance of winning the Premier League now, not because they lost a game, but because of the manner of it all. And it's, Salah seems to have been affected by it, either that or he's got an injury and he's just trying to, you know, see the season out and do the right thing, or whatever he sees to be the right thing. But I think, you know, if you look at the game specifically, Szoboszlai, Salah, Trent, Alexander-Arnold, Konate, Van Dijk, all terrible.
Yeah.
You cannot go into a game in the Premier League against anyone really and have five players in one team play
big
that
big players like that as well.
Yeah, it's you were a bit Souness there.
Big players.
Souness does that sometimes when he's punditing, or used to, and he just go big players in the background.
Big players.
He loves it. He's talking about a gigantic set of players who are like 15 feet tall. That's what he wants to see. He wants to see like giants. He wants to see like Kong versus Godzilla.
And he 2-foot all of them.
Yeah.
Even now.
And they can't do that. They can't do it. And I just think and everyone has an off day, and you know, these guys aren't robots, they're human beings.
They are going for the title to see those players.
To pick
like
a game at that point in the season to build that. I don't think you could honestly say that, as good as Dominic Calvert-Lewin was, and as I said, he rolled back the years a wee bit actually, given the recent times that he's had, and he looked brilliant. Do you honestly think at the very top of his game Van Dijk has a problem with Calvert-Lewin?
No, of course not.
I don't think he does.
No, he doesn't. And even if Liverpool had put away one of those chances, which they should have done, I'd have still fancied Everton to come back and score again. You know, these performances, I mean, the Manchester United game, when it was the 2-2 at Old Trafford in the league, when you thought they should have absolutely hammered them, really strange, from loads of missed chances,
yeah,
and eventually
crazy,
they drew the game. You think, that was odd. Anyway, and then, of course, that a while later they get beaten by Atalanta. And suddenly I feel almost like the wheels have come off. And that Fulham win, which I thought was them getting on back on the bandwagon, you know, sort of professional display, as we like to call it, it's looking like the anomaly now. Whereas Look at Arsenal. Arsenal lost to Villa. Then they go out to the Champions League. Not looking great. Bang. They beat Wolves. Wolves was their professional job, if you see what I mean. Mm. And then Chelsea, bang, have that. Mm. We're serious about this, and we all know what Man City.
They've both got Arsenal, Man City. You look at the numbers and stuff. They're better teams this season. But by the way, it's great to see Wazza in the punditry booth, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I love him. I'll tell you something now.
Yeah,
I can't see him enough.
Well, do you know what? Since we've seen him a few times being interviewed and on various things of late, you realise that there is an interesting and a very funny bloke in there. And I you can say this with a number of players from that kind of era, because they were always told to be very politician-like with the media.
Yeah.
I think nowadays it's not quite like that with a lot of online content and fan channels and not just fan channels, you know, the club's own channels. So they want a bit of personality in there and whatnot. But those guys, it's good to see.
He's sitting next to Daniel Sturridge. He's merely 3.5 years older than Daniel Sturridge, and he looks like he belongs in an entirely different generation. It looks like one of those, on Remembrance Sunday, they do those kind of like an old soldier talks to a current soldier about the commonalities between their lives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wayne Rue looked like he served in the Second World War, and Daniel Sturridge is like just come back from like Iraq. yet they are very, very similar in age.
Rooney would say, "Oh, is it all drones now? Is it?" Oh, right, okay. Yeah, blimey.
Wayne was really, really happy that Everton won, and you can't deny him it. Right. He's just so pleased.
Yeah.
He's just so pleased to sit like a nice grin inside a gigantic beard, like a gigantically strangely coloured beard.
Yeah.
And then these clear blue eyes. He looks like, do you know what he looks like? He looks like a faithful but simple accomplice on a medieval fantasy based quest.
Yes. Absolutely spot on.
Yeah.
I was thinking, yeah, he's like a Tolkien sort of creation.
I'm all for it. I love it. Yeah. I can't see him enough. I wish he was on telly every day.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Dion Dublin, and when I'm not banging my dube, I'm listening to the Football Ramble.
But Marcus, going back to your point, just quickly before we move on that, on the scene that was you know, the scene that during the game of Liverpool's bench and how they looked so defeated. Yeah. The Jurgen Klopp quote is interesting after the game, and perhaps speaks to that, speaks to your assessment, which is that he said, I can only apologise for today to the people. We should have done better, but we didn't. I mean, it sounds defeated, doesn't it?
Well, he does. And
normally he's really punchy and like complains about something, right?
Well, and that's the tide has turned. You know, Jurgen Klopp now is cutting the same figure that he did for a lot of last season. Last season was a strange season where we'd seen Liverpool the previous season to last season, two seasons ago. We'd seen them, you know, firing on all fronts. You know, it was nearly won the quadruple. It was utterly incredible. And then last season, Klopp, he was just going, yeah, I don't know what's happening. He seemed a bit confused and how are we going to get out of this one? And it was strange to see him like that. But they carry on. They get a Europa League finish. This season, he started to wind it up. And in sort of recent months, you think, ah, there you go. And when they lose or it doesn't quite go their way, he's all a bit punchy and a bad loser and a bit prickly, as you say, which is Klopp in full flow. I can't remember which game it was. It might have been the Atalanta game when they lost 3-0. He was baffled and he was confused and he was saying, yeah, this is not good. And he cut that figure again and he's done it again here. You know, as you say, we should have done better, but we didn't. That's not the winning Klopp. Do you know what I mean? That is not the fully focused, you know, fifth gear Klopp that we've come to know and admire in the vast majority of ways over recent seasons. So yeah, I think this is probably, I mean, we shouldn't forget that even if Klopp was to stay, even if he was going to stay another two or three years, this is a transition season for Liverpool. So, you know, you could argue that they've overachieved. I think we've started to think that they were the Liverpool of 2, 3, 4 years ago. Actually, they've done really well to keep the pace with Man City and Arsenal for a long period.
I think if they have to finish third this season, I wouldn't say they've overachieved. I'd say it's about right.
Yeah, maybe. Probably because of the poor performances from others, I suppose you would say. Yeah, fair enough. They're 3 points behind Arsenal, having played the same amount of games. They're a point ahead of Manchester City, but Man City have two games in hand. Their next game's against West Ham on Saturday. Again, you would think, oh, they should beat West Ham, and West Ham lost 5-2 to Palace the other day, didn't they? But now, goodness knows.
Yeah, they're in a position that you don't want to be in. You see big teams have this situation sometimes. Man United do it a lot where you look, I mean, not saying you're right, but you look at the fixture list and you go, not sure where they're going to get another win from.
Yeah.
Like, you know, all of a sudden, every game now looks quite hard.
Yeah.
Like you can, you know, might go to West Ham and win.
But they're not scoring goals.
Yeah, but you don't, I mean, Spurs at home, maybe they'll win that. Going to Villa Park when Villa are gunning for a fourth place, they're going to win that. Probably not.
I don't know.
So it's looking tough for them now. It really is. But Everton, on the other hand, everything, you know, in the immediate term, and they've got a lot of issues off the pitch. But you know, their running is actually really straightforward, and in fact, they've probably already done enough. So I mean, Everton fans might be frustrated to see their team just revert to type again now, revert to that team that essentially, when was it? They went on that run from kind of the end of January through to the start of April. They just didn't win a game. Like, inexplicably, just didn't win a single game. They might revert to that type again now the job's done. I hope not, because I think they've shown tonight that they can be, you know, a really good, intense, actually quite interesting to watch, physical, impressive team. And they can take a lot of heart from that. And hopefully they can maintain that intensity from the rest of the season and beyond.
Mm. Well, it's unlikely that Sheffield United are going to catch Everton or anybody in the safe zone in the Premier League, having been beaten 4-2 by Manchester United in this round of fixtures as well. They did have Manchester United going for a bit. They were 2-1 up, but Manchester United, they played their penalty card. They got a soft one. Fernandes obviously scored. Then he scored a lovely worldie. And then Rasmus Højlund wrapped up the game. So typical stuff that we expect from Erik ten Hag's men. Ten Hag's been prickly of late. We spoke about that on Wednesday's pod. But again, Luke, this game, Manchester United, they're all over the place. Yes, they won the game. But the fact is, 6 goals. You cannot take your eyes off them.
You can't never know what you're going to get, but you actually do know what you're going to get with Man United, and it's basically a completely unpredictable load of chaos all the time. And yeah, it's really a really strange situation that, you know, Erik ten Hag's team are like a team of, like, you'd expect like a happy-go-lucky manager to like a couple, like a Keegan, do you know what I mean? Like, Keegan seemed like he just loved it. You know, he got angry and stuff, and like he was gutted not to win the league that time with Newcastle. But like, it was the team were a reflection of his personality, right? If Man United are a reflection of Erik ten Hag's personality, they'd have 3 players sent off every game. Every game would be 0-0.
Yeah,
it's just not like that. Yeah. And I really find it a curious situation, because the facts are the facts, right? You look at the Premier League table, Man United have got the points they've got. They've got 53 points. They're in 6th. Yeah, that seems okay. That seems fine. And I want to just go to Erik ten Hag in maybe a press conference and sit him down, shake him and go, I'm not looking to take your points away. You've won the games you've won. But I cannot have you saying this is good. This is not good, right? Stop getting affronted by people questioning it for not being good, because it isn't good. Take the wins, take the points. They're yours to keep. But this can't continue.
Yeah,
this is your fault.
Right. Yeah, indeed. It's like a man saying, I'm feeling very thirsty. I'm a bit parched. Getting a glass of water, pouring some of it over his face, down his clothes, but then drinking the rest of it, and everyone looking at him going, what are you doing? Well, I'm no longer thirsty, am I?
There's nothing weird about
this. That is what I set out to do. Yeah, I set out to quench my thirst. I'm no longer thirsty. Why?
I also love Jason Wilcox takes up his role, because Man United are actually putting a bit of structure in place now, and Jason Wilcox obviously a part of that, very highly rated kind of football, kind of technical guy, and he's briefing. I think he might have actually spoken to maybe Man United TV or some press team, but there's certainly been briefings out there where he said that, you know, he's essentially saying in a diplomatic way, this can't continue. We need to be aligned. No. We're Manchester United. This is what we need to do. Yeah. And the first game they've played since he's been there, they have greeted him with exactly the more to say. It's like you've had your toddler make your dinner for a week, and it gets to about Friday, and you say to your toddler, we can't have smiley faces covered in chocolate sauce again for dinner tonight. And that's what you get served up.
Yeah, we are going to have to cook the pasta this time, okay? Yeah, I know what you mean. Good to see Andre Onana getting involved in the antics.
Listen,
as well.
I said to you before.
Poor guy.
Weirdly, Manchester United, to an extent, are a bit like Jackson Pollock, right? There's paint everywhere. It costs a lot of money, and it somehow works. Like, you kind of quite like it, right? I mean, Andre Onana is experiencing his Guernica at Man United. He used to be perfectly competent and straightforward and quite realistic. Now he is totally surreal. Like, there's no predicting what's going to happen to Andre Onana next. And that is quite remarkable, really. I mean, he basically passed the ball straight to Jadon Bogle, who just smashed it in at Old Trafford in a Premier League game. It was like Soccer Aid.
Yeah. If we're going to throw artists in the mix, then is Erik ten Hag a bit like Rolf Harris? You're looking at the formation and Eric's going, oh, can you guess what
it is? I don't think you should be mentioning Rolf Harris, no. But in that context, it's probably okay.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I'm not endorsing Rolf. You know, No.
You're a previous member of Rolf's Cartoon Club, aren't you?
I used to wish I was.
Well, the good news for Erik ten Hag is that he's unlikely to get annoyed about being compared to Rolf Harris, because he doesn't tend to get annoyed by anything, does he? He's not prickly or anything, so he'd probably take it on the chin.
If I did ask him, though, I said, "I was, you know, do you find yourself often compared to Rolf Harris? And he said, well, you've embarrassed yourself there. I would sort of go, yeah, I'll take that one on the chin. Everything else, though, I think you've embarrassed yourself there.
Yeah,
something which was quite noteworthy in that game when Harry Maguire scored a lovely glancing header. It was what I would say was a fitting goal to break the Premier League goals in a 38-game season record. So, yes, since it's been 38 games for individual teams, of course, in the Premier League, that was the 1,085th goal, which is right. So if people have been thinking, it's been a lot of goals, it's been a lot of big scores this season, well, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I think Sheffield United have played their part there, haven't they?
They have. They've conceded 92 of the bastards.
So basically, it's a record season,
yeah.
And they've conceded almost 10% of them.
Crazy. There's still four games to go. Can they get up to the 100 mark? That's what I'd like to see. Now, Derby County fans obviously hate the fact that they have that really unwanted record from their 2007-2008 season in the Premier League, where they amassed, 11 points or something piss poor like that. Seems crazy that a team could have been that bad. So I don't think that record will ever be broken. However, Sheffield United have conceded the most
the record.
Goals
right,
in a Premier League season now. So yeah, they've taken that off Derby. So Derby fans, did a little something that perhaps you didn't think you were going to get.
I think also, you know, that 2007-2008 Derby team and the way they disgraced themselves, it still wasn't the most notable thing Paul Jewell did that season, was it? Was it?
It certainly wasn't. Yeah, we saw Poole's duel, didn't we? My goodness. Yeah. Just draw a discreet veil over that one.
Yeah, which he did.
Yes, indeed. They should have done.
Just a little napkin. There's just two egg cups and a kidney dish.
Oh, dear. On a car bonnet. And they say romance is dead. Certainly wasn't back then. Well, elsewhere in the Premier League in this round of fixtures, Bournemouth beat Wolves 1-0 at Molineux. Wolves had a couple of VAR decisions go against them, which they were angry about, so Cella V. But Bournemouth up to 10th. Some cup teams around them have got games in hand on them. Bournemouth had a great season. They really, really have. They haven't been worried about relegation for a while. Iraola's come in and done a brilliant job. And you know, I think if when it comes to the league manager of the season, if Arsenal win the league, Arteta should get it. Even if they finish second, I mean, he'd still be in with a shout. Guardiola will be in the shout, of course, because he's, you know, just because he keeps winning all the time. We shouldn't wipe that from the record. Unai Emery would be a popular choice, but just an honourable mention to Iraola, who's done brilliantly with Bournemouth.
He has, and I think we said this before, but the hierarchy at Bournemouth deserve credit for sticking with him as well, because it took them till the end of October to win their first league game, didn't it? And there were kind of murmurings that they might have made the wrong appointment, but suddenly it clicked. They win a game against Burnley. They obviously have that game against Man City, which is just, you know, a bit of an asterisk because it's Man City. Then they go on an amazing run, and they had a bit of a wobble in February, but they've not really looked back. Yeah. Since
elsewhere in the Premier League, Crystal Palace beat the Piff Posse 2-0. Old Mateta can't stop scoring.
Oh, he's a great player to watch when he's in full flow. That was a great goal. That 1-2 goal.
Yeah, without Ayew. I love a 1-2. Very underrated.
He's you don't see as much of him these days. He's a very very like enjoyable player to watch. Very graceful player to watch. I'd like to see more of him.
Well, I mean, he got in the team when Eduard got injured, I think, back in December.
Yeah, he's having a great second half of the season. He's scored like 9 Premier League goals this season.
Yeah, well, can we still call him the new man at Crystal Palace?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, under him, he's scored a lot of goals of late. So great win for Palace. But Pete Donaldson was in attendance at the game, and he sent us these voice notes on his way back from the game.
So I'm sat in the home end, and my mate's got a big old bag of jelly babies. And every time Newcastle do something a bit rubbish, they lose the ball or they get harried. I steal a jelly baby out of my friend Chris's pocket. And I've had a lot of hooves tonight. Also, I saw Eze do about 3 or 4 puffs on an Ventolin inhaler. And I'm Team Paul McCaw, and I hate seeing that, and I hate saying that. Oh, yeah, and I was so close to Jason Tindall, I could see the beads of fake tan coming out of his hairline. It was brilliant. He spends so much time in his technical area with his manager, which he shouldn't be doing. And I just enjoyed it. I wish you'd do it more.
Yeah, and that is a really good insight into what it's like knowing Pete. Mm. It's like endless non sequiturs with no chance to really process what's happening, lots of subject changes, and lots of quite kind of obscure observations.
Well, he always will manage to find a sweet treat, though.
And an asthma inhaler.
Yeah, true. And I give him great credit for both.
Yeah.
So what a way to finish the show, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Do join us on Friday for the preview show. And remember, pre-sale tickets for our live show at the Palladium in September go live on Thursday, which is probably today, where a lot of you are listening to this, at 10 a.m. British summertime for members of our new mailing list. Hit the link in the show description below before it's too late. And in the meantime, find us on X, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify. Thank you, Luke Moore.
I would recommend X. Some great stuff on there. Thank you very much. Speak to you Friday.
Absolutely. We'll see you Friday, everybody.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.